This is the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo, episode 30.
So scaling systems is so important. Having other people do that hard legwork, the data entry is so important.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interview, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Hey, welcome back. Alex Pardo here. Excited to have you listening in on another Masterclass Flip Empire Show. I have Lex Levenrad on the line here. And Lex is actually somebody who's kind of in my backyard. He's in the Broward, West Palm area. I'm here in Miami-Dade County. And Lex has been doing this business since 2003. And since then, he's racked up, and done over 500 transactions, everything from wholesaling real estate, fix and flips, any type of creative real estate deal you can think of, he's done it. He's an expert when it comes to bank REOs, real estate owned properties. And that's actually one of the topics that we're going to be covering on today's show, because it's not something that we've tackled in the past. So I think you're going to get a lot of content and value out of today's show, where we're really going to dive into, marketing, what's working for Lex and his business, marketing for distressed sellers, getting deals, and also working with agents on the MLS and picking up more REO property. So whether you're just getting started in this business or you're a seasoned vet that's done hundreds of properties, I think you're going to enjoy today's show, because we're going to cover some different areas that seem to be a challenge for investors in today's market. So having said that, Lex, man, I appreciate you being on the show.
Hey, Alex, thanks for having me.
Fantastic, man. Well, listen, why don't we, before we get started here, if you can kind of give us, a little bit of an introduction as to, I know I just mentioned that you got started in 2003 and you've done all types of deals. Maybe if you can start by giving us a 30,000 foot view of what your business looks like today.
Okay. Today obviously it took quite some time to build up to where we are today, but right now our office wholesales 10 to 20 houses a month. And we also rehab 4 or 5 properties simultaneously. So we're fixing and flipping as well as wholesaling. And we're also active landlords. We have a fairly decent single family rental property portfolio in 7 different counties here in Florida.
Wow, fantastic. So, I mean, obviously to get to that point, you have to have, systems in your business, and you've been able to scale to the point where, like you said, you're doing 10, 20 houses a month. You're not only wholesaling, you're building up a portfolio, you're fixing and flipping. What does it take to get to that point if somebody's listening in and they're just looking to get started? Maybe they've done a handful of deals, but they're having a hard time getting to that point where they need to scale to do more volume and generate more revenue. How did you cross that bridge and get to that point?
Well, you hit on it when you said the word systems, and systems is really the key to everything. And it's actually one of the biggest challenges that we found to implement in our business, because as a new investor, like for those of you that are listening, if you've never flipped a house before, you've never wholesaled before, your first challenge is just learning how to do it, how to find a property, how to tie it up, how to flip it to someone, and how to get paid.
That's right.
And then once you've done that, then your next challenge is learning how to replicate that. In other words, great, you made some money, you made, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000, but how do you do it systematically so that you can do it again next month and the following month, and then twice a month and 4 times a month and so on? So that's the first challenge for most people. Once you get through that, then the next challenge is basically dealing as your business grows. You're going to find you have more leads, you have more sellers calling, you have more buyers calling, and you're not going to be able to manage all of that volume by yourself, mm-hmm. which is a very good problem to have. And at that point, you're going to have to figure out how to systemize it. So you're going to need to hire people to post your deals on your blog or on your website or on Craigslist. You're going to need to hire someone to deal with incoming calls from distressed sellers and people looking to sell their properties. You're going to have to hire somebody to deal with speaking on the phone with buyers that are looking to buy your properties. And it's a process that you scale over time, but systems is very key.
Yeah, no, and let me tell you, you hit the nail on the head. I just want to piggyback on something you said. You talked about hiring people. I remember, 6, 7, 8 years ago when I was basically a one-man show with me and a virtual assistant, I was the one sending out the marketing. I was the one speaking to sellers, meeting with sellers, marketing the properties. And you have to realize that that works at the beginning so that you get a foundation and you understand and learn this business. But if you really want to scale and you want to start to do volume, there's only 24 hours in a day. And if you're wearing all the hats in your business, it's not, you know, it's almost like it's a business that's built on a house of cards, so to speak. And so I'm glad you mentioned hiring people and building a team, because I truly believe that, you know, that's the way you build, scale, and automate a real estate business, especially if you're in the wholesaling or fixing and flipping. I really feel strongly about the fact that if you want to get to that level, especially your level where you're doing 10, 20 properties a month, I'm glad you mentioned that you really need to focus on hiring and building a team.
Right.
Yeah. Question for you before we get into the marketing and, you know, distressed sellers, getting deals, REOs, before we jump into that, you know, we obviously you touched on the importance of systems. In a nutshell, do you have a step-by-step process of, if you were going to teach someone, okay, well, you know, you understand the importance of a system, but how do you actually go about creating a system?
Well, you know, the whole thing really stems from just having leads to begin with. So when you start out, what I tell a lot of people is, I say, listen, if you have your real estate license, you can market your deals and my deals and anyone else's deals. If you don't have your real estate license, you can only market your deals. So just from a sheer logic perspective, it would make sense for you to have your real estate license because you can market other people's deals.
Right.
So I would say for anybody who's halfway serious about wholesaling for a living, you definitely want to get your real estate license. Now, once you've done that, now a world of opportunity opens up for you because you can start networking with other wholesalers and asking them if they mind that you market their deals. And most wholesalers are going to say, I've never had a wholesaler say, no, please don't market my deal.
That's right, yeah.
Right? I mean, because they want their deals sold. So basically, in a very short period of time, if you get, like, let's say here in our local market, maybe 10 different wholesalers and they all start sending you their deals, well, you're going to have, you know, 40, 50, 60 deals every week that you need to post somewhere. So that's where hiring someone is going to come in. So if you hire someone, even if it's someone who's a college student or you know, only working a few hours a day for you, maybe 2-3 hours a day or 10 hours a week, if all you did is had them post your deals, let's say on somewhere like Craigslist, immediately your phone would start ringing. Buyers would start calling you and saying, what's the deal with that property? And then all you'd need to do is contact the wholesaler and find out the information and pass it along. And already you would have a system in place to potentially sell a house on any one of those buyers who called on any one of those listings, even if they weren't your own deals. So that's the problem with a lot of beginners is that they hear that, but what stops them is the fear of hiring someone because they think, well, I got to pay someone $10 an hour for 2 hours a day. That's $20 a day. That's, you know, $100 a week, $400 a month. And they think of the $400 a month and immediately they give up or they quit or they worry about being able to afford that. But it's really a mindset, because if you go into it from a mindset of, I'm going to sell one of these houses in the next month and one of these houses is going to make me a $5,000 profit.
Bingo.
So if I had to pay an intern $400 out of that $5,000, I'm still left with $4,600. So what you should be doing instead is asking yourself, okay, if I spend $400 a month, let's just say I did this for 90 days, the worst case scenario is you lose $1,200. Best case scenario is you flip a house.
Mm-hmm.
You'll probably flip more than one house, maybe two or three. And if you did, boom, you're in business right there and then. And that's without even marketing to distressed sellers, without even finding houses yourself under contract. You know,
that's
so
right. That's right.
That's
yeah.
Why.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
so scaling systems is so important. Having other people do that hard legwork, the data entry, is so important.
I couldn't agree with you more. And one tip I wanna throw out to people that, you know, maybe people haven't thought of, and it's something that, Lex, that you just touched on, is you mentioned the word intern. You know, this is something I did years ago. I went to Miami-Dade College, community college here locally, and a lot of these colleges and community colleges, they have a career services department. Reach out to them and find out if they're giving students credit for doing free interns. So, you know, sometimes it's just about creative problem solving and just, you know, thinking outside the box. If you're literally someone that you're getting started and you don't have a penny to your name, like you literally have no money to put towards your business, you know, reach out to some of these colleges and see if you can hire an intern that'll work for you for a couple of months for free in exchange for some college credits. Get started that way. And then once you get a little bit of money, it's crucial to hire a virtual assistant or hire somebody that can start doing some of these things that Lex just touched on. So I'm glad you mentioned that, man.
Right.
What percentage of your deals that you guys are closing are cold wholesale deals that you work with, you know, where you find a buyer for another wholesaler or vice versa, versus you, you know, getting your own deals from direct mail marketing off of the MLS, et cetera?
I would say that 70-80% of what we move is not stuff that we directly have under contract. We are, though, in a unique situation because we have a program called a partnership program where we teach people how to find deals and be bird dogs, mm-hmm. and they bring it to us and then we market it for them. So we're selling a lot of our students' deals via the partnership program. But in addition to that, we have around 10 different wholesalers that are sending us their deals. We're putting out their deals too. So in between all of that, we put out our deals as well, but probably I would guess maybe 2 out of 10 deals are deals that I myself personally have under contract.
Okay. What are you finding? I mean, obviously you and I we're in a pretty hot market here in South Florida, but regardless of what market people are in across the country, what would you say in general you've seen continues to work for you? You know, is there anything that you're doing from a marketing standpoint that is yielding some of your best results?
Well, you know, it does change over time because when I started back in 2003, we used to do it the old-fashioned way. We used to take bandit signs, put them in the trunk, drive out to our market, you know, pop them up on phone poles and wait for the phone to ring and then go meet with the homeowner and sign a contract. That was the way we did it from 2003 till around 2007. But once the foreclosure crisis hit and all these properties started going on the MLS, suddenly we had all these REOs and short sales. Initially, there was a lot of short sale work. So we had for about a year or two, all we were doing was meeting homeowners and preparing short sale packages and buying their properties on short sales. Then that evolved into like around 2009, all the REOs were on the MLS. So the strategy changed yet again, and now it was looking for properties on the MLS. There were REOs, and then from there we had all the online auction sites like auction.com and hubzoo.com and homesearch.com, and we started bidding online on those properties. So today is a unique situation because you can actually just go on a site like auction.com or hubzoo.com and you can bid on a property, get it under contract, and flip it without even leaving your house. Yeah. That's a unique scenario that we never had before in this market.
You know, I've said so many times that there's really no excuse to succeed in this business, especially in today's market, because with the internet and with so many tools and resources at our disposal, I mean, it's just so much easier than it was 10, 15 years ago. I got started in 2005. I know you were a few years before that. And I remember back in the day when I got started, it was literally like you said, I was putting flyers in parking lots at Home Depots and I was putting out bandit signs. And while that stuff might still work today, if you're consistent with it, I think anything that you do consistently will produce results over time. It's just so easy to get started these days. So let's kind of segue into REOs. I mean, I know that that's an area that you're an expert in and you've done hundreds of REO deals. What's the best way to get started with REOs in today's market from your perspective?
Well, like I said, we're in a unique situation right now because you can just go on a website like even realtor.com, which is free for everyone to use. You don't have to be a real estate agent. And if you went into any town or city in the United States, no matter where you're listening in from, just put your city in realtor.com and just select single families, search low to high, and you'll see the cheapest priced properties in your town, and those are going to be the REOs and the short sales, and all you have to do is pick up the phone and get hold of the listing agent and make an offer to buy the property. If you were to try and do that consistently, then you'd run into a couple of obstacles. Number one, you'd realize it's quite hard to get hold of the listing agent, because a lot of times their cell phone info, their email address is not online. That's where having a real estate license can really help you, because you'll have access to that information. So, mm-hmm. you know, if you can flip one extra house a month and make, let's say, $5,000 on it, and that's $60,000 a year, why on earth would you not spend $700-$800 a year to have access to the MLS? It just doesn't make sense. So if you're serious about, you know, flipping houses for a living, or even if you're serious about flipping houses in your spare time and you just like to make an extra $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 a year doing it, still it would benefit you to have a real estate license. So once you figure out how to get hold of the listing agent, then it's just making an offer and speaking to them and saying, listen, I see your property's listed at $80,000. I'd like to make an offer, you know, for $70,000. Do you think that'll work? Do you think the seller will accept that? And then a lot of times the agent themselves, even though they cannot give you a price, you can hear just from how they respond to that question. They say, oh, that won't work. We got 15 offers. So then you could respond back with something like, oh, okay, so I'd probably have to go close to asking. And then if you say nothing, a lot of times the agent will say, oh, you'd have to go way over asking. So I say, wow, I'd have to go into the mid-80s. And like, well, you'd have a run in the mid-80s. So without giving you a number, they've given you an idea that if you made an offer of $85,000, you have a shot at getting that property. So for a lot of new investors, that's a whole challenge. If you've never worked before on picking up a phone, calling someone, some people had jobs where they were in sales or they cold called, they feel comfortable. But most people feel very uncomfortable on the phone. So there's a learning curve on learning what to say to the realtors, how to get hold of the realtors, how to have that conversation until you feel initially comfortable enough. And of course, when you're on the phone and you're making an offer on that house for $80,000, you need to know, well, is that house worth $80,000 or is it worth $100,000 if it's worth $120,000? If you have no idea what it's worth, you can't have that conversation. So they all kind of go hand in hand, having the knowledge to be able to have that conversation, to be able to make that offer.
Yeah. So in terms of coming up with an action plan, because one of the things that we strive to do here on the show is leave, you know, at the end of the show, I'm going to ask you if there's one specific thing you'd recommend people do. So kind of along those same lines, as it relates to REOs and working with agents, getting properties off the MLS, is there a specific game plan or an action plan you would suggest people, whether it be a certain number of phone calls that they make to agents on a daily basis, a certain number of offers that they have to send every day? I mean, what's the quickest way to accelerate people's success within this area?
Okay, well, if I had to give you one quick tip that would benefit people immediately after this call, I would say just go to hubzu.com, H-U-B-Z-U.com, and register as a buyer and start following auctions that are there. You can bid on properties, and if you get an offer accepted, you can flip it to someone if it's at a decent price. The second thing I would say is that as far as offer making is concerned, if you go to a site like realtor.com, you should try make 5 offers a day, which is 25 offers a week, or 100 offers a month. So if you're making 100 offers a month, you've got to have maybe 5 or 10 of those offers being accepted. So if let's say 10 were accepted, and you gave them to someone like me or Alex to market, even if we only sold 20% of them, that's still 2 deals a month.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right? So you know, it definitely is a numbers game. And a lot of time I'll sit with students and say, well, they'll say, I'm having a hard time. I'll say, well, how many offers did you make last week? And they'll say, none or one. I say, okay, that's just not going to cut it. Because the more offers you make, the more conversations you have with the realtor, the more comfortable you're going to get. If you just zone in on a market, and it doesn't matter what city or state you're in this country, because I have students from all over the country, but if you just zone in your market, learn your neighborhood, learn the subdivisions, learn the price points, then you'll feel much more comfortable making that offer, and you'll recognize a deal. And that's really the key. If you can just learn how to recognize a good deal, then you'll know when you see it, and when you do, you'll pounce on it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. What do you suggest people do in terms of actually doing the homework and the legwork to learn their market? I mean, are you suggesting people drive around and just, you know, running comps, looking at properties, seeing what things are selling for? I mean, is there a specific, I guess what I'm asking, Lex, is there a specific process that you and your students take to start to learn, you know, certain areas of certain counties, subdivisions, what areas are hot, what's moving, etc.?
Yes, well, you know, I started my business of real estate back in 2003, and I worked at the time under a guy named Ben, who was my mentor. I worked for him and his partner for 2 years, and I was a bird dog for them. So basically, the setup I had with them is I'd drive around looking for properties. They would buy it, they'd put their name on the contract, and if they decided to buy it, I got paid a fee of $5,000. So that was the setup. It was basically a referral fee. Mm-hmm. And I learned a tremendous amount by bringing them deals and saying, hey, I got a good deal, and they'd look at it and say, well, this is garbage. I'm not interested. And I would learn and ask them, well, why not? And little by little, by scouting for properties, by being a bird dog, you learn what works and what doesn't. So when I did that process, and then I converted it into coaching with students, what I did is I would tell students to pick a specific target market that works for them. So ideally, I'd like it to be within a 20-mile radius of where you live. So you could just take where you live, look on a map, do a 20-mile radius around it, and then pick a city inside that 20-mile radius that's got affordable homes, the kind of homes that landlords would want to buy to fix and rent, the kind of homes that would be first-time starter homes that you could buy, fix, and flip. And then once you've got that, go to the city hall and ask for a map. Okay, so if you go like here locally, let's say, for example, Pompano Beach, you can walk in, you can get a map. And then when you get that map, it will show you the subdivisions. So you can see, let's say, talking about Pompano Beach, you've got, you know, Cresthaven, Pompano Highlands, etc. Exactly. So now, now that you've got that information, I would recommend that you drive up and down the streets and get an idea for the different subdivisions, the different neighborhoods, the different price points. At that point, go back to the computer, to something like realtor.com, and then you can type in the name of your city, search low to high. So there might be 500 houses for sale in that specific town, but you're only interested in the 20 cheapest ones in that town. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then what you do is print those out, and then you get back in your car and you drive out and you start looking at each one of those houses. And that's how you learn, and you see, okay, this house is listed for 60 and this house is listed for 80. And then you see a house that looks like a real good deal because it's listed for 40. And when you go to it, you realize why, because it's, you know, like a war zone or a really bad neighborhood. And little by little, you learn the subdivisions, the zip codes, the neighborhoods inside your town and city. And when I say 40, keep in mind, you know, if you're on the West Coast, it might be 400 or 300. But
that's right.
The point is, depending on what city you live in, the price points are different. You can go out to Birmingham, Alabama, and buy properties for $10,000, $15,000. Here in Florida, a lot of the entry-level markets are $80,000, $100,000, $120,000. There's a lot of places in the country, like Los Angeles, where entry-level is $250,000. But either way, you learn your specific market. And when you're driving through, start noticing things. For example, bandit signs. When you see a bandit sign, give it a call. You know, they've got an investment property for sale. Call them. You're speaking to a wholesaler. Ask them, you know, can you send me whatever you have? I'm interested in buying. And you start learning who the operators in your market are. And, you know, little by little, as your knowledge increases, you'll start recognizing which deal is a decent deal or not. Yes. At that point in time, that's where you can decide what to do with it.
You know, and it's so true what you're saying. And once you have, you know, once you've hit the streets and you've hit and you're learning the market, you're going to see how much more confident you're going to feel and sound when you pick up the phone and you speak to an agent, a buyer or a seller, because you've done that legwork and you understand your market. And I think, you know, one of the mistakes that I see investors make, not only here locally in our market, Lex, but in markets across the country is, you know, they get too comfortable doing this business behind their computer, you know, not getting out in the street, not making phone calls, not meeting and talking to people. And while you certainly can do deals, you know, from the comfort of your home behind a computer, you know, especially if you're getting started, you're going to accelerate your results by going out there and taking some of the action that Lex just talked about. You know, you see bandit signs, call those people. Those are wholesalers and potentially cash buyers. You see the mailman, you know, pull them over, talk to them, find out about vacant properties. I mean, if you start shuffling the deck and doing enough of those actions, you're going to start to see results over time. So one of the things you mentioned, Lex, and I think it's critical to people doing deals in this market, is being consistent, sending a certain number of offers on a daily basis. You suggested doing at least 5 offers a day. Are there any tools or resources that you're using to make that a simple process? You know, because I think, you know, someone might be listening and saying, well, I don't have time to handwrite a contract, or, you know, and obviously you and I both know there's certain tools that can accomplish that much quicker. I'm curious if there's anything that you're using to, you know, help automate some of these processes in your business.
Right. Well, you know, like I said, the market's definitely changed. And when we first started out, we were going out and we're putting bandit signs ourselves and fielding calls. And then the market evolved from that to short sales and then REOs. And when there were REOs on the market, we had to go out and join all these auction sites and bid for the properties online. Subsequent to that, now what we're finding very recently, I would say probably in the last 6 months, what we're finding is that the inventory on the online auction sites, there's so many people bidding on the properties that there's not enough inventory. Mm-hmm. And so what's happening with that is that we're going back to the systems and methods we used back in 2003 or 2004 looking for properties. So we're starting to do, in the last 6 months, we've implemented new bandit sign campaigns, and we've also implemented new mailing campaigns, and we're using a unique mailer that's where we use invitation envelopes. So it looks like a wedding invitation, and mm-hmm. it's handwritten with a personalized stamp, not a bulk mail stamp. And we're actually sending those out to people that are in foreclosure or on abandoned properties or probate lists. and we're fielding the calls on those. And, you know, once again, it's a numbers game. You're only going to get about a 3 to 5% response rate. So, you know, if you mail out 1,000 of these, you're only going to get maybe 30 people calling you back. And out of those 30, maybe only 4 or 5 are actually a deal that's worth pursuing. Mm-hmm. So, but if you steadily put those out and you do it every day, every week, month after month, any campaign you try, you should strive to at least do it for 90 days. At the end of 90 days, if it's not working, you can stop it, look at how much you spent, and see if it was worthwhile. You know, so we have marketing with billboards, TV, radio, banner advertising, bus bench ads, you know, online, offline, pay-per-click, Facebook. We've tried everything, and we give it 90 days. And at the end of the 90 days, we do a cost analysis and see if it's worthwhile. So, for example, with billboards, we figured out that we spent $7,200, and the lead flow that was coming in from it, while there were leads coming in, they weren't of as high quality as leads that were coming in off of online sites like Zillow and Trulia and whatnot. So we shifted our advertising budget accordingly. So systematically over the years, over the 13 or so years that I've been in the business, I would say that the two things that consistently have always worked and will always work is mailing out, whether you're mailing out yellow letters or you're mailing out campaign, you know, like personalized invitations. Mm-hmm. That's always worked, and bandit signs have always worked, because at the end of the day, you know, if a homeowner's in foreclosure and they're thinking about what to do and they drive down the street and they see that yellow bandit sign says, you know, are you in foreclosure? Give me a call, I can help. They're probably going to make that phone call. So those are the two areas that we see a lot of deals coming in off of.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of direct mail. You know, most of our deals are coming in from direct mail the last couple of years or so. So, you know, one of the things, when you get to a certain level where Lex is at, I think it's great to have different irons in the fire, so to speak, you know, have all these different marketing campaigns. But, you know, if you're looking to just start doing a couple of deals a month and then you want to scale, I would suggest, and Lex, feel free to disagree with me or jump in with your thoughts. But, you know, before we wrap up here in the next few minutes, I would suggest focusing on one or two marketing campaigns. And like Lex said, you know, give it a 90 day period, but don't just send out, say, for example, you take direct mail. Don't just send out one or two campaigns. Take that list and send out at least 4 to 7, what's called touches, you know, so every 2 weeks to 30 days, you want to resend to that same list, because, you know, what we found is that not only do most of our deals come from the actual follow-ups, but sometimes a homeowner won't respond to us until the 4th, 5th, or 6th mailing campaign. So in a 90-day period, you know, very bare minimum, you should be hitting that list 3 to 4 times. I would actually recommend probably going 6 to 7 times.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So awesome, man. Listen, I appreciate the time, Lex. Let's wrap this up on this. I know you've given several tips, you know, throughout the call, but if we were going to kind of wrap up our entire conversation, put a bow on it, what's the one piece of advice, you know, you would give us about running a successful real estate business, and specifically one that's built on systems that eventually you can scale and do the kind of volume that you're doing?
Well, I think the most important thing, especially for beginners, is that I find is to just build a successful foundation, because I think a lot of people they come to the concept of investing in real estate because they'd like to make more money. So a lot of people might be, you know, either they hate their job or they feel like they don't make enough money, or maybe they're broke, not making anywhere close to what they'd like to be making. So when you're approaching real estate from that perspective, you're approaching it from a bad perspective, because your only focus is how can I make money as quickly as possible. And that's not really a good way to approach it. If you want to make money as quick as possible, go get a job. If you want to figure out how you can actually utilize real estate as a tool to increase your wealth and increase your income and your cash flow for a lifetime, then what you need to understand is that there's a whole process, a whole system in place. You can learn how to wholesale and flip houses. And if you can do that consistently, you can make way more money than you'd ever make working on your job. And you can do it probably in a third or a quarter of the time.
Oh, yeah.
But having said that, you know, you have to build that foundation. You got to learn your target market. You got to learn how wholesaling works. You have to learn how to build your buyers list, how to find properties. And there's a lot of variables that go into that. So give yourself some time. Give yourself a 4 to 6 month learning curve, and then go out and consistently put in those offers or do the effort that's needed and give it a certain period of time before quitting. A lot of people, they go, they implement one or two things, they make a couple of offers, and then they stop. Mm-hmm. And that's not what you should be doing.
Yeah, no, I think consistency is the key. So I think that's probably the main takeaway here is take action, be consistent with whatever you decide to do, send offers on a daily basis and learn your market. Start there. So Lex, where can people reach out to you if they want to find out more about, more about you and some of the things that you have to offer?
Okay, well, you guys can visit my website, lexlevinrad.com. That's LexLevinrad.com. And I've also got a free book about wholesaling on there that you can download. And that gives you a lot of tips specifically about wholesaling bank-owned properties.
Awesome. Awesome. Hey, Lex, man, I appreciate it. If there's anything I can do for you, I know obviously we're here locally. Hopefully we can connect on a deal here soon. So appreciate you being on the show, man. I thought it was a great, great show here. I think people are going to really enjoy it.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you very much for having me, Alex.
Okay. We'll talk soon. Take care, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.